This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the October 3rd edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. Now, we're here to talk about the investing principles that impact retirement portfolios, anybody's portfolio, but principles that are long-lasting and don't change. They don't change with the times. They don't change with, you know, I just remember in the late 1990s, everybody's telling me that that it's different now because it's the internet and everything's going to be bought and sold and exchanged and done on the internet. So it's different. So earnings and sales, that means nothing. It's eyeballs coming to your website. That's everything. Yeah, right. These principles don't change. They don't. There was a very popular book a few years ago called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fulghum. A new study shows that the lessons kids are taught by age 7 determine their money habits for life, or can determine it anyways. So teaching your kids about money at a young age is very important. Not easy, but important. Beth Koblener, a personal finance writer, cites research in her new book, Make Your Kid a Money Genius, even if you're not, a parent's guide for kids 3 to 23. That shows that parents are the biggest influence on a child's financial behavior. Well, it just makes sense. I mean, I don't need a study to know that, do you? So what lessons are you telling us about? What lessons should you teach your kids? Or do you even talk to your kids about money? Now, my parents didn't talk to me about money. I can guarantee you that. Didn't talk to any of us, any of my brothers. Nobody. They never discussed money at all, except we didn't have any. That's all they ever said, is we don't have any. That's all the conversation we got. So what lessons should you teach your kids? Should we? How much information should we pass along to them? I don't know. So I want to hear what you think. Why don't you give me a call? In an ultra-low interest rate environment, it's like we are in now, it's tempting to dabble in stocks to boost short-term returns. I've seen people doing that, taking a lot more risk in the stock market because they can't get a good return on their bonds or bond market. But there are many more lessons to hold on to stocks. Four reasons to hold stocks long-term. Not short-term, long-term. That's our main talking point today. But let's go ahead and get into the phones. I try to answer the questions live during the hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. If you want to call, I'll answer. But there's also all those questions people leave on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. This is Tim. I'm calling from Boston, and I listen to your podcast daily. Great show. I have a question about stock issuance and stock buyback. Everyone kind of knows that when a company announces that they buy back stock, that's a good thing, and generally prices tend to increase after that. My question really is about when they announce that they are going to issue more stock, what effect that really has, particularly on stock price, earnings per share, that type of thing. I don't know if that's viewed as a questionable thing or a bad thing for the company. Thank you. Looking forward to your answer.
Well, you got good and bad on that. There's both sides of the coin when companies issue more stocks. First of all, the reason why they're issuing stocks is generally to buy another company, build a factory, expand their operations. So the bad thing is they're issuing more stocks to get money, right? That's what the primary reason for. But what are they doing with that money? And so many times what they're doing with the money is making the company more valuable or making earnings better or buying a competitor so they don't have to compete with that competitor anymore. Something. And that is viewed as good news. So there's the bad news of dilution and the good news of whatever they're doing with the money. Now, if whatever they're doing with the money is bad news, in other words, investors don't think it's a good idea what they're doing, the stock will go down. But generally, when they issue more shares, it's not necessarily going to mean the stock is going to go down because earnings per share is being diluted. because the perception might be that earnings per share is going to go up, so the dilution is justified. Remember, companies can finance growth or expansion in three different ways. One is to issue more shares. Okay, issue more shares. That gives them money for those shares. Now those shares are out in the public. They got money. Now they can grow or expand. Two, they can just borrow the money from the bank, right? Just borrow it to expand or grow. Or three, they can issue bonds. Those are the three ways companies finance themselves going forward if they need a big infusion of cash. Okay? Now, what if they just get a big infusion of cash just so they can pay it out to you in a dividend? That's not very good use of the money, is it? And that's where you hear me saying they're using your own money to buy back, to pay you a dividend, because they're not using the money that they're gathering to grow the company. The money that they're either issuing new shares, bonds, or borrowing to expand the business, but rather to pay a dividend. That makes no sense. Okay. These are some of the stories for InvestTalk Insiders on the news, a news carousel on our website, InvestTalk.com. The stock market has remembered the big banks have allies in Washington. Small cap, mid cap companies have a lot riding on Trump's tax cut. And GE's Jeff Immelt is free to look for new work after stepping down early. It's kind of interesting. And the outlook for pay raises in 2018. There's a lot of articles that rotate in and out all through our news carousel. Just news keeps coming in. I think it's pretty interesting. So why don't you take a look? Now, there is an article that I thought was pretty interesting that might want to bring to your attention, and that is about the modest increases in annual raises. It kind of defies economics 101, if you think about it. The unemployment rate has been below 5% since May 2016. Many companies are having a hard time filling positions, particularly for skilled workers. Typically, when the demand for workers grows, wages go up. Now, why haven't they really gone up? They have gone up very slowly. But the companies are complaining they don't have any skilled workers. Well, why don't you attract them with more money? I'm sure you can find them. You'll have more people coming. Now, one possible explanation is older workers are retiring and being replaced by younger workers who earn less, which drags down the increases. So maybe wages are going up faster. Maybe they are, but the way they count it, as the older people retire, they're high wage earners, and younger people are lower wage earners. So it looks like maybe they're not getting raises. Is that possible? Let's see. Wills Towers Watson found that employees who had earned the highest performance rating received an average salary increase of 4.5%, and those with the average rating received 2.6%. Now, read the story on investtalk.com. It's right there. It's interesting. That's higher than the average wage increase for last year. But increases are, so the average is, it's interesting, the salaries are going down, maybe because older workers are retiring. Interesting. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What does it mean to have a defensive portfolio? How do you go about hedging your investments against a downturn? You can ask your question between 4 and 5 Pacific Time, Monday through Friday, live right here, right now. Or you can always leave a question overnight. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Chart. We're going to go talk to Noel first in Napa Valley. How you doing, Noel? Noel, are you there? Hello? Noel? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I stepped away for a second. I own a Griffin, symbol GFF. I've had it for quite some time. And what do you think would be a good exit price?
Okay.
It's been languishing, but lately it's been moving up because they recently added a couple of small businesses they purchased. And so I guess people are seeing future earnings.
Yeah, they acquired Tuscan Landscape Group and Australian garden decorative products for about $18 million. Okay, this is a $1 billion company, Griffith Corporation.
52-week high, has been 27.
Yeah, it looks like that's about very close to 27. Is a 52-week high. Manufactures plastic films, laminates, garage doors, landscaping products, and electronic communication systems. It's out of New York. The symbol is GFF, Frank. It's going to make 85 cents a share this year. That's up 1 cent from last year. But it's going to make a dollar next year, another 18%. And it's been flat as far as sales. The sales in the most recent quarter went up 2%. And before that, it was down 1%, down 5%, zero growth, down 10%. So every quarter, except for this most recent one, has been kind of going down on their sales to flat. So no one likes that. No one wants to buy a company that's that way. There was a lot of inside buyers when it was around $14, $15. But now it's at $22.70 today. No, they're not buying it now. It just hit the 200-day moving average, Noel. Just came up to it. So it's going to act as resistance to it. And the 200-day moving average is, I have it at about 22.50, and it's at 22.70. So that's going to act as resistance. You're hoping that it'll break through. And, of course, as you pointed out, the high is going to be, what, $27. And so from here, if it stalls here and starts to go down, I think you got to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If it stalls here. But give it a couple of weeks. Let's see what it does. If it breaks through here, then the next slowdown will be about $25.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'd get rid of it before it hits. Probably not going to break 27. It just doesn't have the horsepower to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was kind of looking for hoping for about 25 exit around there, but
you might get that. I think that's well. If they break this 200-day move average up, it's going to 25. Okay.
Yeah. So if it doesn't make it in a couple of weeks past 22.50,
I give up.
Give it up.
Yep.
Okay.
I would.
Sounds like a good plan. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks, Noel. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Four reasons to hold stocks long term. That's our main talking point today. But I also want to talk about similarities between the current conditions we're in right now and the conditions of October of 1987. Why am I saying picking that day? Because on October 20th, 1987, the Dow went down 20% one day. So I want to talk about that. And the Fed's favorite tool is no longer working, so it's focusing on a different tool. We're going to talk about that. And finally, the most and least valuable states in America. It was very interesting. I think I need to share that. That's kind of fun, a fun stat. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. You know you can take advantage of our free retirement reviews no matter where you live in the U.S. Just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review, and set up a time. Now, we've talked for quite a few years and talked about investing in the stock market long-term is the best way to do it because any short-term, you just never know. Short-term, but I do think we've got a confusion of what's long-term versus short-term. Short-term is not a week or a month. Short-term is like a few months to a year. That's short term. Long term is multi-years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, long term. Now, the long term return for the last, they did a study in 1928, which includes the Great Depression, right, to 2015, is 9.5% per year, including dividends for the stock market. 9.5% including dividends. It used to be 10.5% up until about 2000, by the way. And the decade of the 2000-2010 hurt it quite a bit. And we have had a lot less dividend growth. The dividends have been low for for the last 20 years almost. So it's kind of pulled down the return. But 9.5% has been the long-term average. Now, this compared to 3.5% for the three-month treasury over that long term, 5% return on the 10-year treasury for over that long term, 5% per year. Now, the trick here is there are certain multi-years and even decades when treasuries work better than stocks. But on the long term, but over the long haul, stocks work better than any other investment. So think in terms of long. When you say long term, it's not this week, this month, this quarter, this year, many, many years. And if you think in those terms, then you know the corrections I talk about, that we're going to have a correction 10% or so, I don't know when, but it would be very normal. You could care less about that. So you should have part of your portfolio or the majority of your portfolio designed for long term. And one of the reasons for this is it's almost impossible to time the market. Almost impossible. Very few people can do it well. I'm including myself. Don't think I'm excluding myself. It's just very, very difficult. And besides that, the long term you hold, and if you sell it, if you had it long term, at least you have lower capital gains taxes too. Now, capital gains tax is what? At your ordinary income tax level rate if you keep something and have a short-term capital gain, and that's 1 year or less. 1 year or longer, long-term capital gains rate, and that's 20%. Used to be 15, and it went up when President Obama got into office, but 20. It actually, if you even go further back, it used to be 25%. That seems a little harsh, but that's what it used to be. Way back a couple decades ago. I don't know exactly when. Anyways, long term, unless you're going to want to be a trader or swing trader, then, but the majority of your portfolio should be long term, and then you can play the short term game if you wish. And it's just much more difficult than you think. Let's go back to the 24-hour listener line. Anytime you want to call, we'll pick it up. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for the great show. I've got a 401k question. The company I work for is Gannett, symbol GCI. I'm confused as to why the ticker price is radically different than the Gannett stock fund price within my 401k. For example, GCI has been hovering around $9 a share, and the price of the Gannett stock fund has been in the $6.50 range. There doesn't appear to be any other investment in this fund other than the company stock. I called customer service for Vanguard, which manages the 401k, and didn't quite understand the rep when she explained that the price really reflects the bundled unit and not the actual ticker price. Maybe this type of thing is common with other company stock funds within different 401ks. Thanks a lot.
Well, that's not a very good explanation. And I'm not sure, because it can be done in different ways, that the stock that you hold in your 401k could be a different price than the publicly traded stock. And I'm not sure. I can't answer that with the information I have. Now, Gannett Company is, you know, it's a billion-dollar company, 109 local media organizations and digital platforms in the United States, you know, so... I'm not sure. I can't answer that question. I don't have enough information. Not sure how to answer that question. But you need to find that out. There's a reason for it, and I'm sure it's written down. And I'm sure in your 401k they need to explain it, and so that you can understand it. So I would go back and say, okay, where is that written so I can study it and see what it says myself. I wouldn't just take that answer and just let it slide. 888-99-CHART is my number, everybody. Did you see Tesla? And it didn't produce it produced about 250 new vehicles this last quarter when they promised it would, of their new model, the cheaper model. They promised 1,000 or 1,500. 1,500 is what they promised. And it was obvious to anybody who studied this stuff, they had trouble with the other two models, the first one and the second one, and now, of course, they're having trouble with the third one. It's normal. But it was interesting. The stock fell initially with that news, but it ended up today. Interesting. You can reach me right now as we move into part two of today's show. My direct line is between 4 and 5 Pacific time. It's 888-99-CHART.
We continue with our podcast. First, a word from KPP Financial. When you make money choices, you try to be objective, of course. Look for the facts. Look at your life situation. Some people choose to work with a registered investment advisor, and one of the most important reasons is to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. It's not only a way to share the worry, it becomes a practical matter. A professional advisor has the resources and experience. They study the market. They try to anticipate what might happen. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been serving clients all across America. They're accessible, responsive, and maybe most important, the KPP principals invest right along with their clients. They call it parallel investing. And to find out more about that or any of their investment programs, just go to investtalk.com when you're ready and click on the investing tab. And now we continue with the podcast. InvestTalk continues on a service of KPP Financial. It's called Parallel Investing. The principals at KPP invest right along with their clients. KPP Financial, independent thinking, shared success. Our InvestTalk listener line is open 24 hours a day, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Jay in Fremont. How are you doing, Jay?
Yeah, hi, Steve. Steve wanted to know if MU is a good buy.
MU, Micron Technology, has had a really good run in the last year, from $17, $16, $17, all the way up to $40, and it's been up in 4 or 5 days in a row, but the last month or two has been a sharp rise. I would be skeptical about buying it, chasing it right now. I think it's really too high. But I want to say this, Jay. From a valuation, it's still pretty cheap. It's an 8 PE. Okay, they're going to make $7.55 next year after making $5 this year. The year after, they're going to make $6.53. I don't know how they can estimate that far ahead. But, you know, $7.56 and the stock is $40 a share. That means it's not overpriced. Why? Well, because its earnings have been pretty erratic in the last 10 years, you know, up and down. And this is Micron Technology, everybody. Manufactures RAM and flash memory and image sensors using computer servers and consumer electronics. And it's a $45 billion company. It's huge. But sales have been skyrocketing in the last 4 or 5 quarters. Before that, they were falling sharply for 4 or 5 quarters. So that's one of the reasons why the PE is low. Is because it's erratic over the years. But right now, it looks awful cheap. I wouldn't chase it. I'd wait for a pullback, and then you can step into it. $32 would be something I would be very interested in buying this stock, right around $32. MU is a symbol, everybody. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay. The Fed its favorite tool was raising and lowering the short-term rates called the Fed funds rate. That was a rate they lent to banks, how much money that the banks would borrow from the Fed and the rate they charged the banks to borrow that money. And remember, they moved that all the way down to zero. And some central banks around the world meant it less than zero, okay? But we went down to zero. Well, that was the tool that they always used to use to drive the other rates, because all other rates are driven by supply and demand, not by what the Fed does. The Fed only controls the rate they lend money. So what they saw happen in this most recent crisis, when the market crunched down in 2008, is they lowered the interest rate, went to zero, and it really didn't have a big effect. So then they started QE, quantitative easing. That is probably going to be their new weapon of choice to control interest rates. And what is the reason why I'm even bringing this up is because they have $4 trillion plus balance sheet, okay? Before QE started back in 2009, whenever it started, when they started doing it, their balance sheet was, you know, a few billion dollars, not trillion, just a few billion, which was pretty small when you consider our size of our economy. So now they announced last time they met that we're going to start slowly cutting back their balance sheet. But they're not probably going to cut it back that far because they're going to use that balance sheet to control interest rates. They're going to use it right now to try to boost rates higher in the marketplace by selling some of their treasuries and other mortgage bonds that they have, selling it. Because if they have, remember, they're no longer a buyer, so they're no longer out there buying these things as they did in QE. Now they're a seller of these things, putting more things in the market. So people are going to say, well, if you want me to buy, you got to pay me a higher interest rate. So that will tend to boost all interest rates. So I think we have to start considering a different path in the future here as far as what the Federal Reserve is going to do. I don't think they're just going to, they'll still use the Fed, raise and lower the Fed's funds rate, but I think they're going to use their balance sheet to help control interest rates too. That's what I think they're going to do, because it seems like an obvious path. And I've read several articles that I'm not the only one thinking those terms. I think that's probably what they're going to do. Gaining knowledge in the investment world is never-ending process. It's a never-ending process. The more you learn, the more you begin to understand what you don't know. It's like going into a room of knowledge. And in that room, you see all these other doors leading to more rooms of knowledge. Now, everyone started entering that first room, okay, learning how to do things. So where should you go to that first room? How about going to our book list at investtalk.com? We have a book list there you can start reading. Books on how an economy grows and why it crashes by Peter Schiff. That's very good. That's on that recommended book list. Go to the section book list, recommended books on investtalk.com.
If you have a question on our talking point today, there's a link to a related article on our website right now on the homepage, or you can put your question in writing if you'd like. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. They will get back to you.
Hi, this is Brian from New York City. Just a quick question about 401ks. I work for a smaller company, and they just started offering a 401k program. I'm worried about investing in it because what happens 10 years from now if the company is not around? I'm worried about what happens if the company goes bankrupt, goes out of business. What happens to that money in my 401k? Is it tied to me or the business? Who controls those funds, and what rights do I have to them? Thank you.
That's a worry you should not have. You don't even think about that as a worry, because what happens is this is your money, yours, okay? It's going into a 401k under your name. It's not your business name. It's not the employer's name. It's not in anybody else's name except yours. And it's in a 401k in which you buy mutual funds. Usually they give you an offering of mutual funds. And the custodian of those funds is not your company. The custodian could be a big insurance company. It could be Wells Fargo. It could be, find out who your custodian is. And almost every 401k custodian is SIPC insured, SIPC. So the federal government backs up your money. See, so you don't, this is something you should not even think about. It's not a worry. It's not a worry. You need to invest in your 401k. Your employer does have no control. It's totally in your control. That's your money. They can't take it. They can't go and say, oh, I want to give some of that. They can't do that. It's not their money. If they did, let's say they did, then the custodian is in big trouble, and you'll get your money back through SIPC Insurance. So you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it getting stolen. You do have to worry about the investments you buy with your 401k, but not it being anything but your money. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. Okay, we're in October, everybody. And October is one of the best companies, or it is well known in the investment world as one of the most volatile months and worst months in the 12-month period. Why? Because on October 20th, 1987, the Dow Jones Industrials went down 20% in one day. Now think about that. The Dow Jones is what, 20,000? Okay, think about what 20% on the Dow would be today. Think, you people have no clue how painful that would be. I mean, the Dow is sitting at 22,641. 20% would be 4,000, a little over 4,500 points on the Dow in one day. Down 4,500 points. Now, what was the backdrop before this happened in 1987? What similarity do we have between now, right now, and then? And I have five of them. Back then, they had the rise of what was called portfolio insurance. Rise of the portfolio insurance. Today, we have the rise of passive ETFs. Not exactly the same, but it's related. Back then, before the crash of 1987, the market was very bullish. It was very bullish. Back then, the market rise seemed unstoppable. What do you think today? Do you feel that the market's just going to keep going up? Do you feel any fear that it's not? Back then, valuations were very high. Are they very high now? And finally, back then, earnings were rising, justifying the rise of the stock market. Earnings are rising. Well, earnings are rising now too. Now, just because there's this similarity does not mean the market's going to crash. So I don't want you to feel that, okay, the market's going to crash because there's these similarities. Well, there's a lot of similarities over a long period of time, but these are a bit more significant than the other similarities. I mean, very bullish, earnings are rising, valuations are high. Those three things right there make me nervous. And the sentiment that people think the market's going to keep going up, that is not stoppable, that worries me too. Well, I don't know if I gave out the numbers, but the Dow was up 84 today. The NASDAQ was up 15, and the S&P up 5. One thing that kind of disappointed me, remember I mentioned yesterday we finally had the proper stocks up on volume and stocks down on volume, where there was more stocks up on volume and less stocks down on volume? Well, today we had 73 stocks up on volume and 130 down on volume, while the market is still moving up. That's odd. That's wrong. That's not how it normally is. That's just not normal. That's all I can tell you. When we're in a bull market, kind of tells you the market's very narrow. And I've said that before. Narrow meaning not that many stocks are moving up. Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question, doesn't matter. If you have two complex questions, I'll tell you, I don't know. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, my question is regarding index fund versus managed fund. I recently read a book that suggested that investing in index funds is very likely to produce lower returns as compared to managed funds. And the book listed maybe 10 to 15 reasons for that. I wanted to get the opinion of this radio show on that question. Thank you very much.
Okay, I like to see that book because it's totally wrong. In the long term, index funds have beat most of managers. And most of the reason for that is index funds don't charge a fee to manage. Or let me rephrase that. You can buy an index and the fee is microscopic compared to a managed fund. An index fund, you know, is also, you know, people think it's not managed, and it really isn't actively managed. It's passively managed because, like the S&P 500, almost every year, some stocks leave and some new stocks come in. But, you know, there are not that many. I mean, it's not that many, but they do come in. The weak stocks leave and the strong stocks come in. But historically, index funds beat most of the active managed funds. And when the bull market is in full rein, which we have since 2009, the bull market's been pretty much on board with just a one-year slowdown in there. Index funds usually beat managed funds. Managed funds look much better when the market goes sideways or down, because many times managers are, you know, prepare for that and are a bit more defensive. Index funds just go down with the market and just go down. Good call, though. Thank you for the call. We're going to talk to Gene in North Carolina. He wants to talk about the crash of 87. How you doing, Gene?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Steve.
No problem. I appreciate the call.
So that stock market crash in 87, they called that, that was one of the days they called Black Monday. Is that right?
That's exactly what it is. It was a Monday, and it's called Black Monday.
Well, you said it was the 20th of October, 1987. That's a Tuesday. It happened on the 19th.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right, because I'm looking at the October 20th Wall Street Journal.
So that's right. You're looking at the newspaper the next day.
Exactly. So it
was
the
19th. That was back in the old days when the news cycle wasn't 24 hours.
That's right. So, yeah, I have the Wall Street Journal in front of me. It's so old and yellow, and it's the 20th, October Tuesday, October 20th. So it happened on that. You're right. And thanks for the correction. I appreciate that. It was the 19th. It was a Monday.
There was one thing I wanted to ask you about that crash. I heard something recently that was a Monday. I heard something about the news about that week, that there were events in the week prior to that Monday, I think on a Thursday, that some people, maybe hedge funds or some type of institutional investors, were selling or needed to raise a lot of cash because of possibly trying to cover themselves with commodities that they owed, or something to do with the commodities market or some other market that was not the stock market. And that led to this crash because they had to do a lot of selling on Monday. Do you hear anything about that?
It could be. It is. There's always a trigger for this, Gene. There's something that caused this, you know. There's something that always does cause. As I'm reading through the top headlines of this, it doesn't really indicate that, other than there's an article about Iran and violence in Iran, but I don't think that was doing. So I'll see if I can find more. I'll read parts of this newspaper and see if I can find out more, and I'll report it on you. Appreciate the call. You're listening to Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is my number. Give me a call. 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? How about this? China speeds push for electric cars. Now, I've read several articles now about China. And what China is doing is not anything like what we're doing. For instance, in Beijing, you can't get license plates for a gasoline car very easily, but you can get them very easily for hybrid or electric cars. So they're using the power of the government to force people, push them into buying electric cars. As opposed to here, it's more of we here have market forces to do that, even though we still have California have emissions. We do the same kind of thing as China, just not with a heavy hand, as far as our government is concerned. And just so you know, it's happening all over the world, not just here. India has a goal to sell only electric cars by 2030. Only electric cars by 2030. The UK and France are aiming to end sales of gasoline and diesel vehicles by 2040. So there's a lot of government push. And, you know, electric cars are much more efficient than gasoline cars, much less polluters, So, and I've talked about the efficiency on the show before, comparing the efficiency of gasoline cars and electric cars. And I've pointed out that electric cars are much more efficient. But they're not as efficient as everybody thinks because of the cost of actually building it and what, you know, the electricity you got that you plug into your wall. That electricity has to come from somewhere. It's got to be produced, and many times it's not produced by clean energy. So it's not as efficient as many people say, but it's still much more efficient than electric cars. The big issue here in the United States, though, is it has to compete with gasoline cars. It has to compete distance, how long it takes to fill it up with electricity, how far can you drive in one charge. There's a lot of competition. So it's not just going to be that simple, but we are moving in that direction. Everybody's moving in that direction. So you might as well just get used to it. It's going to happen. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's try to answer one more question before the hour's up. Okay, same number, 888-99-CHART, our 24-hour listener line.
Hello, this is Jim from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I listen on the podcast. I'm wondering about a stock here, what your opinion is on Varian Medical. That symbol V as in Victor, A as in Apple, R as in Roger. Just wondering what you think. I'm looking to possibly get into it. Really appreciate your show. Thank you very much. Bye now.
Okay, Varian Medical Systems, VAR, develops oncology systems and equipment used in radiation therapy, X-ray imaging components, and subsystems. It is a $9 billion company. Sales are growing very slow, 2 to 5% per quarter, last couple of quarters. If you go back four quarters, you know, on average about 5% or so. They're going to make $4.04. Let me rephrase that. They made $4.04 last year, but that was down from the year before, $4.29. And this year it's going down more, $3.93 a share. But next year it's going to rebound to $4.44. It's a $100 stock. Therefore, it's a pretty high PE range. It's right near its high of its PE range, 14 to 28. So I'm saying is, you know, at $100, $100 is probably going to act as a natural resistance area. But I would not buy it here because it's moved up very nicely and it looks like it's having trouble. If it can go above 107, which was its recent high a few weeks ago, then maybe it's going higher. But at $100, that means it's down about 6% from its high. I think that you're going to see a struggle here. It might turn sideways on you, but it's just a bit too expensive for me. I like the company. Very good. Hardly any debt. Good return on equity. All those other numbers are good. It's just expensive. And I don't think I'd chase it here. VAR, Variant Medical Systems. Time's up for the hour, everybody. It may feel like a monumental task, but reorganizing your retirement portfolio and aligning it with your current needs is something that begins with a simple one-hour discussion with me. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and the whole KPP family, thanks for being with us today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.